Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I continue with my year in review series, looking back at the year that was in professional wrestling in the year of our Lord 2024 with a stop in July. Join me, another first-time guest, formerly of Wrestling Inc., currently a free agent. We chat about that. Jack Farmer. Jack Farmer joins me for the very first time. We had an awesome conversation about the month of July. Very fun and lively. We talked about, of course, Money in the Bank. Stephanie Vaquer departing CMLL and signing with WWE in a very surprise move after just appearing at Forbidden Door. And then Bobby Lashley and MVP not returning to the company. So definitely shifting of the tides there in WWE for who they're bringing in and who they're getting rid of. The drive to All In happened, of course, for AEW, leading into their big show for August. With the Owen Hart tournament winners, we had some new matches, of course, made for that. MJF winning the International Championship, changing it to the American Championship, if you remember that. And, of course, we talk about everything else that happened in the month. The best of TNA, Japan, the juncture, all the things that didn't fit within the WWE and AEW categories. Join Jack and I for more than an hour with some great wrestling talk, talking about the month of July 2024 in pro wrestling. The Year in Review series returns here on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. It is cold outside in New Hampshire. It is 31 degrees on this Friday. I don't know if it's cold where you are, but we need to heat things up in the Year in Review series. July is a good way to heat these up, and of course, a good way to heat things up is to go to a place where it's always sunny. Los Angeles, California. You've heard of it. It's on the west coast of the United States. Jack Farmer joins me. Jack, of course, did a ton of interviews, podcasts, and such forever for Wrestling Inc. He's also done all kinds of stuff in pro wrestling. Man after my own heart, ring announcing. He's a pundit, as he says, an analyst, hosting commentary, jack of all trades. Jack Farmer, for the very first time, welcome to Josh Nason's Punch. This is a thrill.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, the trick to being a pundit is I learned, my buddy Steve Kaufman told me, there's zero qualifications to call yourself a pundit in something. So if you just want to throw that on your Twitter handle or your X handle, throw in pundit. There's no licenses needed. You can be a pundit about anything.
I like that. And I mean, this works for so many people during the political season. So I think yes. I think it might as well work for pro wrestling as well, which feels like politics in so many ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, people definitely get as divided, I think, in pro wrestling as they do in politics.
That's true. I love the Jack of all trades aspect, because ring announcing, you and I were just talking before we started recording. I also was a ring announcer at one point as well, an indie wrestling ring announcer, which was a lot of fun and terrifying at the same time, not wanting to mess things up and do all those things. So you've involved in this business for some time, huh?
Yeah, the ring announcing, by the way, is so fun. And what's interesting about pro wrestling, I don't know about your journey and how you got started, but I think most people are very similar in the sense that you want to do something, some things happen, and suddenly you're thrust into a job that you have really no training in how to do. So like I wanted to do ring announcing, and I fought for it, but one day I found myself in the middle of the ring and them saying, okay, do it, and me going, I gotta figure out how to make this sound right, because now everyone's looking at me and you have this envisioning in your head, what if I get it wrong and the wrestlers are upset or whatever. But it's so much fun. I mean, ringing out, like, the thing about ring announcing too is you get to feel the energy of a crowd when someone comes out. And I always say one of the most powerful things about it, one of the things I loved most about it, is like the it factor and things. Like, you get to feel it factor with certain wrestlers when they come out. I got to ring announce, not to sidetrack, Jacob Fatu though once. And like, let me tell you, the crowd shifts when that man enters the ring and when he comes out. And it was like, oh, this is what an it factor entrance feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, indies are just so great. I've talked about that before here, but I would always encourage people, like, for so many people that they think indies, there's a segment of fans out there still think the indies are high school gyms, right? And that, those type of things. The indies are so much more than that. And for so many people that are saying, oh, the indies are dead, or they're broken, all this stuff. I mean, you go around and like, so I just actually this week I'm going to Limitless Wrestling in New England, here in Maine, or next door in Maine rather. And I do some stuff for them. A ring announcer actually, a ring announcer for these smaller promotions in Maine founded this promotion 9 years ago, straight out of high school, used his graduation money. And it's turned this into like a well-known thing. And his view, his goal back then as a 19-year-old was to put on a promotion that didn't just have the high school gym feel. He wanted to bring in talent from all over the place. And his first show had Zack Sabre Jr. against Chris Hero. So,
Oh, wow.
and now in Orono, Maine, which is the University of Maine, is very small. And 9 years later, he's on his 10th straight sellout, and you know, 450, 500 people at an AmVets in Southern Maine, you know, and
So cool.
you feel those it factors. So you never know where you start and then where you eventually kind of end up at and all those things. So yeah, but you mentioned Jacob Fatu. So Zilla Fatu actually worked for Limitless a couple months ago. You feel that it factor, you can feel it, right? And I felt it with him. So it's funny you mentioned Jacob. I'm like, Zilla, that's the same thing. Like I mean, they had never seen before. It was his first time working there. And people came out and they were just like, snap of a finger, they were into it. It's incredible. That incredible feeling, 400 people feeling that same emotion is awesome.
My biggest piece of advice to anyone who's a wrestling fan and has only really watched it on TV or only really watched one of the bigger companies, they're great. Keep watching them, but check out an indie show because they are so much fun and it's a different vibe. And I'll tell you, I saw the Bollywood Boys live
Oh, yeah.
at an indie show, and they just hit different when it's a live show and it's a smaller audience and they're dancing around and the music's playing. Like, they are just infectious enthusiasm that now I'm one of their biggest fans because I've seen them live up close. And you get that with so many different wrestlers and so many different people. And the community's cool in wrestling with indie shows. Like, people become friends. Now you'll see fans that you're like, oh, that's my buddy who I see at all the shows. It's just
Yeah.
indie shows. People, definitely, I can't advocate enough. Go check out indie wrestling if you're a wrestling fan.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about indie wrestling on today's show. Of course, we're going over the month in July, and July, of course, featured all kinds of big stuff here. So we'll start off with WWE slash NXT, and of course, we had Money in the Bank, and Money in the Bank featured, of course, two ladder matches, Damian Priest versus Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight title and a bunch of other stuff as well. The TLDR, the event, Drew McIntyre winning the Money in the Bank ladder match and then failed in his cash-in after interference from CM Punk, which continued this really, I think, really well done story. I think so many people thought this as well, but I look back at stuff like this and the fact that, you know, granted, it's part of the kind of the bigger picture, but the fact that Drew was able to give this up and give so much of himself in this, to give up that, you know, the briefcase and as part of this angle, I thought was a really cool add and would just added and built more to their eventual thing. And really, WWE did a great job in keeping Punk involved throughout the year, even though he was injured, which is something you don't see a lot, for example, in AEW. There's guys get injured, just kind of disappear. But there's just you know, kind of some that definitely stood out for the year. Tiffany Stratton won the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, has not cashed in as of this point on Friday, December 13th. So you never knew what could happen before this goes up in a couple of days.
Yes.
Damian Priest, if you remember this, he did not kick out during the match of Seth Rollins with one of the pins. And of course, led to this, you know, the usual kind of groans from the crowd. What's going on here? And he kind of bristled at the idea that in an interview that it was a he had forgot or something. He said there was a situation, and he never really gotten explained what that was. It was a personal situation. Very strange answer, but anyway, that happened. And Trish Stratus hosts the event as well. So yeah, this was not a hugely newsworthy show, but it obviously it's storyline wise, it has your two Money in the Bank. Winners, and one that storyline essentially ended that night, but extended in another one, and then the other one with Tiffany Stratton is still going on, and people are just kind of you know buying their time and waiting until the eventual turn and her to cash in.
Yeah, this was a fun one to look back on. And we talk about long-term storytelling in WWE right now. And it was fun to look back at this and see how many seeds in this show that you mentioned wasn't necessarily a big newsworthy show, but all these seeds are still sort of bearing fruit, you know, whether it be Seth Rollins and CM Punk still being in connection with each other, Tiffany Stratton being the Miss Money in the Bank. So what an incredible show, even looking back in hindsight and how pivotal it was to the calendar year. But the thing that stands out to me so much from this one is Drew McIntyre, much to, as you alluded, I don't know if I've ever seen a wrestler like Drew McIntyre in the sense that I'd say since like 2019, it feels like every year I've been thinking this is the best year Drew McIntyre has had. And it seems like every single year tops the previous year, you know, whether it comes to him winning the title at the empty WrestleMania in 2020, but then continuing to build after that, being a champion. Now this thing with CM Punk, and now you see these interviews where he's talking about giving too much to pro wrestling. You think, man, 2025 looks like it might also be a great year for Drew McIntyre. What an incredible thing for someone who has been in wrestling for so long to continue to have the best year of their career this long in, and again, in just such quick succession, if that makes sense.
And the fact that earlier in this series we talked about him, there was some discussion whether or not he was going to resign. Actually, I thought it was even in 2023, we talked about that as some question about, oh, is he going to jump? Is he going to go somewhere else? And no, he stuck around, and I think most people thought he might, and he did, and really has paid off. And I think at some point it's going to pay off in probably a long title run on either one. A lot of that based on all the work that has been done now, and people are going to see it as. He finally is getting his shot. And I think it's going to be, to your point, I think when you look back, we all look back someday in this span between the empty, the COVID era WrestleMania in 2020 to kind of where we end up. I think it's going to be a pretty fascinating climb. I think it's a good point. It's kind of get better every year. And yeah, I think no slowing down, that's for sure.
Yeah, that rivalry with him and CM Punk, I think probably story of the year. And this is where it was really in the meat of that rivalry. In fact, it made me realize just how big this rivalry was, because of course, thinking CM Punk stopped the cash in with Damian Priest. I was like, no, Damian Priest cashed in on, and you know, I got mixed up almost with WrestleMania, and like, oh no, it continued to play off, and it was just like, wow, this thing's been going on for so long, but it doesn't feel like it's been drug out for a long time, if that makes it's just they've done such an incredible job with that. And of course, Tiffany Stratton, I want to make sure I comment on that, because Tiffany Stratton is someone who I felt like they kind of told every story they could with someone being a Mr. or Mrs. Money in the Bank. Like, either you're going to deviously cash it in or you're going to heroically choose your spot. But this is different. And they found a new way to be a Mr. or Mrs. Money in the Bank. And so it's just very well done Money in the Bank show in this one. Really one that, like I said, really set off the rest of the year.
Yep, I agree. And I'll include these two things in here because they're so indicative of the change in the, I say, the new WWE since the TKO merger and how things have really kind of changed, and we kind of see where things are going. So this was so wild. So Stephanie Vaquer, who competed, of course, at CMLL, but notably for AEW, at Forbidden Door, lost the title to the New Japan Women's Strong title to Mercedes Moné. And then, you know, there was this assumption that if she was going to go anywhere, it was probably going to be AEW, just because that's just what happens, right? In that aspect. But no, the surprise news that she departed CMLL, didn't even bother defending the title, just dropped it and signed with WWE. Shawn Michaels welcomed her to NXT, and it was like, and within like a week or so, give or take, she was already appearing at their house shows in Mexico. So the timing was perfect. This was just like a blur, and just one of those like, wow, things have really changed. Conversely, long timers in Bobby Lashley and MVP, where it was learned they would not be returning to the company. I don't know if we ever got the official of whether it was. It's possible, because I know I've done a lot of interviews since, if it was their decision to leave or if it was WWE's decision to leave, to not resign them, or because Triple H, remember, he was asked in London about this by a reporter over there, and kind of about their status, and he just wouldn't comment on it, which was just, it was just unusual. Anyway, they're expected to not return to WWE, obviously expect to reform the Hurt Business, which they certainly did. MVP made his is his intentions to compete at Bloodsport against Josh Barnett, which he did later on in the year. So certainly they're going to keep active. And we didn't know if AEW is going to be a definite for these guys. That'll become a little bit more clear later on. But yeah, it was just very interesting that you kind of a dichotomy between these two, and that who they've signed wasn't who they usually signed, and the people that left aren't usually who they had leave. So yeah, as I was kind of going through this list and editing, this stuck out as a definitely a interesting kind of point as far as where WWE is right now, who they're bringing in, and who they're assigned to let go. And I'm sure we'll have more of these as the year goes on.
Yeah, these were two examples, I think, of how, yeah, the times have changed in the pro wrestling industry, right? Stephanie Vaquer, first off, I think that she's a great example of how good it is that there are two big wrestling companies in the United States. I don't know the behind the scenes details of this signing at all, so I'm just recklessly speculating, which is one of my favorite things to do in
Of
pro
course,
wrestling, but
podcasting, it's what we do.
right. And so I look, she shows up on AEW. She has a great matchup there. I have a feeling WWE always had their eyes on her, but I think when they saw her do so well in AEW, it made them go, we need to pull the trigger on this right now. And I think that's why there was not defending the title. I think that's why it happened so quickly, because I think they realized that they need to make a deal happen right this second, or they may lose this talent. And that's something that 5 years ago wouldn't be a case, wouldn't be an issue. And I love this because it means that the talent has a little bit more power. They have a little bit more negotiation. They have a little bit more ability to make companies move in their favor. And so I think that this is a really cool thing for her. I think it's a really cool thing for everybody involved. I mean, I guess it's not necessarily the best thing for AEW, because I'm sure they wanted her as well, but
Sure.
AEW's going to be just fine, I always say. As long as Stephanie's getting paid, that's what I'm happy about. And so, very cool. You're right. This is someone who I don't think we would have seen WWE pull the trigger on this quickly in the past. But times are different, and the Hurt Business at the time, Hurt Syndicate now, that was very interesting. In fact, I'm still kind of scratching my head on, I think everyone is, on why they're not still in WWE, because they look and feel so much like a WWE act. I mean, even when you see, I know AEW has a lot of former WWE people on their roster, but even when I see them on AEW today, I'm like, this feels like they have a WWE act on their show right now.
Sure.
And so, of course, yeah, it was weird that there wasn't the no comment line, because it feels like anyone else, Triple H would have just said, hey, that's how it works sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it did feel a little weird. Now, maybe there's something there, maybe there's not. I don't know. But I love the Bloodsport aspect of this. I love how indie wrestling companies are starting, and we talked about this earlier, obviously, are starting to be able to get access to better talent. And Bloodsport has been so cool, which, by the way, Bloodsport is such a cool show in general. But seeing MVP there, seeing other acts there, but MVP there was really cool. And yeah, at this point, it wasn't really sure they were going to show up in AEW. I still wasn't positive. They didn't feel like AEW guys to me, like I said. So their future was very uncertain, but it felt like something big was happening. This was an exciting time in a weird way to be a Hurt Syndicate fan, because it felt like something was happening, but you didn't know when or where it would.
Yep, exactly. And obviously they would end up in AEW, and so far so good. Fans are certainly into them. Even going against Swerve, they have been essentially faces, and people love the music. Shelton has just been I think Pete has been revived in so many ways. And yeah, it's been fun to watch, I think. And yeah, we'll see big things ahead for them the rest of this year, and of course in 2025 as well. We'll talk about some more transactions here in a second. Let's go over this first chunk of WWE and NXT news, and I'll kick it over to you for any thoughts. John Cena, this is a big one. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna break this out. I'm gonna do this right now because I think this is I was excited about this, the John Cena retirement tour, because I love this idea. I think this is I thought the Sting retirement was awesome and one of the best events. And send-offs, and you don't get that a lot in wrestling. And surprisingly enough, some wrestlers don't want that. And but they were able to do it, and I think AEW is arguably one of their top three best nights that they've had, just from a emotion standpoint and the reverence they showed for him. Everything just worked. It was perfect, except they cut the. They mistimed it. So he was doing his speech and then they cut the pay-per-view. I was so pissed. I'm like,
Yeah.
just there was so much you could have just taken out earlier in the show. Just land the plane. You're so close. Just
Right.
land the plane. Land the plane.
Right.
So then we learned that John Cena again announced his retirement tour. It's going to start in 2025. I expect it will begin in earnest in Los Angeles at the Intuit Dome in just a few weeks' time with the debut of Raw on Netflix. And I just love this idea. I love this that he is going to go to all these places and fans are going to get to see him one last time. Again, retirements in fighting or wrestling are only as good as the next phone call, right? Someone
Right.
calls up and says, "Oh, we have this this thing." But overall, I just love this idea of a tour and that he's going to have, I think, significant matches along the way. I'm intrigued what they do in the world title picture, how he interacts with the top guys, CM Punk, as I note here, has already said he wants to face him again. There's so much that he can do, which will tie into the nostalgia aspects of all these things he did in the past. I expect another Randy Orton match. I expect a Punk match. I am so curious if they'll do a Rock match or not. It's really going to depend on the Rock schedule. I said in a previous episode, the Rock to me has like four logical matches left and then can call it good. Reigns, Rhodes, Punk, and then Cena. I think that'd be a great way just to end the whole thing. But I don't know. I've said it like three times. I just love this idea and I think they're going to make a ton of money off it. And I think it's been a great feel good thing for someone that has been so beloved, maligned, but most of all relevant in wrestling for decades.
I'm a huge fan of it too. Now, I'm famously big into nostalgia acts, to be fair. So I'm one of those
Okay,
guys when they say Goldberg is coming back for one more match, I'm like, let's go, Goldberg,
yeah.
let's do this thing. But I do think that John Cena deserves a big retirement tour. He is arguably, depending on how you view him, one of the greatest of all time. And I want to see all the matches that you just said. I want to see Cena go on this tour. In fact, I'm a little disappointed he hasn't had matches since he made the announcement yet. I want to see him as much. I want to squeeze as much juice from John Cena before he's done as possible. But you make a good point about the last match being as good as the next phone call because I can't remember who it was. Someone said Ric Flair's last match, the last match, meaning the most recent, not the final.
Exactly,
Because,
exactly.
But yeah, John Cena, when he announced this, it's weird. Like, we all knew he was stepping back. And I mean, he was barely wrestling anymore. But for some reason, when he announced that he was retiring, it like hit me in the chest. Like, oh, he's retiring, And it's weird because I'm at a certain age and I don't want to presume what age anyone else is. But I'm at a certain age where I still remember John Cena being the new guy, and coming in. And in my mind, the all-time greats who retire are the people who were already halfway through their career when I started watching, not the people I saw come in as fresh young kids, and so there's this balance of both, like it's sad to see him go, but there's also this self-reflection of like, oh wow, I've watched this guy's entire career unfold now. And I agree with you. I want to see those big four matches that you mentioned. I'd love to see him have matches with some of the other guys. I don't know how busy he's going to be as far as how many matches he has, which adds a lot of excitement to it because every match he has, I don't know how many is this the last one or does he only have one more left? How many does he get? I want to see him have a great year. I want to see him get a lot of wins. I know a lot of people say put guys over, make other people look better, build the future. I say forget that. I want to see John Cena just be Super Cena for one more. Give me one more year of Super Cena getting the big wins. And if I could fantasy book it, I'd say his last match should be The Rock, and I think Cena should win. I think he should win the rubber match between the two, the once in
Sure.
a lifetime rubber match. That's how I would do it. And I'm not even the world's biggest John Cena fan, but I just respect so much what this guy has been able to do with his career.
Yep. Like I said, they're going to make a shit ton of
Yeah.
money. The shirts, the tour shirts. I mean, they're going to rake it in. TKO loves money, as we certainly know. As
Yeah.
we
And
certainly
I
know.
mean, and to your point, honestly, like if I have the chance to go to the match that I know is going to be his last match, I mean, I'm going to make an extra effort to go. Like I want
Right.
to see John Cena's last match. And when he comes back, in 2 years, I'll probably just be like, yeah, that's fine.
Just wear the shirt, wear the retirement tour shirt, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna be good. And yeah, very interesting. I think you're gonna see a little run of the super scene. I don't think you're gonna have a sad sack guy out there for a whole year or so. So
Yeah.
I think you're gonna get what you want.
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope so. All right, let's go over some of the first chunk of some of the WWE and NXT news throughout the month. CM Punk finally cleared, and his in-ring return was official for SummerSlam against Drew McIntyre, of course, set up by the aforementioned Money in the Bank angle. Of course, everything that led up to that. Pat McAfee returned after missing maybe 1 or 2 weeks after the passing of his father-in-law. You mentioned Bloodsport 11. Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, of course, expand their WWE relationship past just Shayna Baszler, but also announcing the Creed brothers and Charlie Dempsey for one of their upcoming shows. JoJo Offerman, the widow of Bray Wyatt, had to basically say why she was working fan conventions because she was getting grief online for some stupid reason. And she said so fans could show their support in person, and made a lot of sense and hopefully shut a lot of people up and just leave her alone. The company filed trademarks for Super Brawl, WCW Super Brawl, of course, and then also for Tyra Mae Steele, the former Olympian gold medalist wrestler who made her WWE debut at an NXT Level Up taping. Of course, as Tamera Mensa Stock, why they just didn't leave her name like that because she is known as that name, I don't know, but guess it was, I don't know, marketing. I guess we'll
Yeah.
chalk it up to that. Angel Garza, he had re-signed with the company. Damon Kemp, no longer with the company. A little bit of a surprise there. They announced a WWE 24 documentary on Damian Priest that's going to premiere in August. And then they also had Damian Priest live at SummerSlam weekend as part of the festivities there. Bad Blood set to return to October in Atlanta. A lot of excitement about that. Speaking of Drew McIntyre and CM Punk, The Rock and Triple H reviewed details. Quote unquote details, I should have said here. WrestleMania 40 main event pivot. Of course, this was the long-awaited documentary that took months and months and months to come out. It's supposed to come out that week and ended up coming out in July. And I guess it just depends on what story you believe and what's working.
Right,
You
right,
never know. You never know in wrestling.
right.
Tiffany Stratton said that I forgot about this, that Instagram post comment about Jade Cargill, where she made kind of a racial comment, not the really, really, really bad one, but kind of referred to her color and said it was an honest mistake. I think she was trying to do something to storyline that did not work at all.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that. WWE and Cody Rhodes helped a fan who's denied wheelchair access at Money in the Bank. Kevin Owens opened up at his mother, quote unquote, fighting like hell in the hospital. DIY were crowned new tag team champions on an edition of SmackDown. NXT held Heatwave, which include Ethan Page. Yes, Ethan Page being crowned as NXT champion, something I certainly did not predict at the beginning of the year. Joe Hendry of TNA, we'll talk more about him in a minute. A video clip of him play at the end of the show, just a quick clip, and then a teaser aired during an NXT commercial, and that led to him serving as Trick Williams' mystery partner on NXT as the probably the biggest name to this point of the NXTNA crossover angle that started taking place in June. Really took sprout in July, and Joe Hendry was a big part of that, and was certainly a big beneficiary of that as well. The company announced the dates for a Great American Bash, happening over 2 weeks in August for NXT. The Rascals reunited with Wes Lee on NXT. Again, more of that crossover there. That was kind of a fun moment, and you had more people chanting. This is kind of the funniest thing about the whole TNA NXT thing. You have more people chanting TNA at NXT shows than you have chanting at TNA shows. That's just kind of a funny thing I saw observed, especially with Jordynne Grace and so on and so forth. The company had started talking about adding women's Intercontinental and US titles. That would certainly come to fruition. Drew McIntyre signed with the Paradigm Talent Agency, the same talent agency that CM Punk signed with. And I think Tiffany Stratton did as well in June. Natalya, it was learned that she signed a multi-year deal in June to stick around, which I thought was a little bit of a surprise. I thought maybe she might get out there for a year or two and just kind of wrestle in AEW, CMLL, Stardom, do all that, but she's sticking around. And then Rhea Ripley returned to WWE Raw after rehab from her shoulder injury. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so I think the biggest story to me, or the biggest thing in my opinion, that we saw in July when it comes to those news stories is the other side of WWE, in that the documentaries, the Damian Priest lives and the things like that. Because wrestling obviously is great. I love what happens in the ring. I love the shows. But when you're able to humanize the wrestlers more and give me more reason to love who they are, the more I'm going to be a fan of them, the more I'm going to tune in for them, the more I'm going to buy their merch. And having things like the Damian Priest documentary to help me fall in love with this guy even more, or the stuff that's happening behind the scenes at WrestleMania 40. Of course, all of us had our questions, and like you said, do we get answers? We got someone's answers, but it's whatever. It was compelling television as I was watching it. And these are the things that really set a WWE apart from anybody else that no one else can even touch. Is just these other things that go beyond just the what's happening in the stadiums, but these shows, these documentaries, because these are things that I can get my friends who don't watch wrestling to like to watch. Documentaries are things that non-wrestling fans can get into and be like, oh, who is this person? Oh, this is interesting. And it's something that WWE and TKO, I think this year and in July with those two different releases, really showed that they can flex those muscles. I think we're going to see a lot more of those in the future. And it's just going to continue to be one of these additional things that WWE has on top of all their riches already. And as a wrestler who's choosing between different companies, if I'm a high caliber talent that could sign with any company, and I'm looking at the Damian Priest documentary, I'd be like, well, I could be a great wrestler over at this company, but am I going to get a documentary about me? Like, that's kind of cool to have. That'd be something to show the kids someday. It's just another thing that WWE has that is just outside of the box in pro wrestling that really makes them stand out. And that's what stood out to me in July of last year from WWE.
Good point. Yeah, the fact that they have their own in-house production, and the fact that they're also now leaning heavier into being a content dealer, and they've been doing this for a while, and this is something that TKO is being into, but even before that, WWE and both UFC were content companies, and that pivot that they made, the deal with A&E Networks and so on, and the end of cable, so to speak, has been maligned, but there's still a lot, 60 million people that have not cut the cord, plus YouTube TV. There's all these places you can watch, like in A&E, for example, and you see some of those type of documentaries. And I mean, we live in our bubble, but you never forget the person that just has cable that doesn't watch hardcore, or watch it enough, and flip through. It's like, oh, I'm going to check this out, right? I mean, it's those things like that, or people that have network or WWE or have Netflix, they're going to be like, oh, who I saw this guy, huh, that's kind of interesting. Oh, this documentary is 38 minutes, I have time to watch this. And then all of a sudden they're like, wow, that's a really cool story. So yeah, that's having that all in house, and having that as such a focus is a big positive for them, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And going through here, I love that you mentioned the TNA thing as well with NXT, because we talk about our bubble, and sometimes I think we overestimate the bubble sometimes, because we'll talk about, oh, this person's maybe big in their small company, but they're not big outside of that, and there's a lot of times people have said, oh, they're a star in TNA, but could they be a star in WWE? Or they're a star on the indies, but could they be main eventers and whatnot? And with this NXT TNA partnership, what I saw was, and I know NXT is probably a bit more insider than maybe a Raw audience, but the fact that everyone in NXT seemed to know everybody that came through from TNA tells me that at the very least, a broader group of fans are aware of TNA and maybe wrestlers who aren't on the main stage than I think we've given them credit for. Because yeah, people knew who Jordynne Grace was right away. They knew who Joe Hendry was right away. And I think that that's a really good sign for the strength of wrestling outside of the big two in that case. Because yeah, everyone knew who these people were the second they came out. There was no hesitation.
I wouldn't be surprised to see more involvement for those two arena shows that TNA just announced for next year, where people are like, wow, they're on the UBS arena. Like, those are big buildings. I wouldn't be surprised to see some NXT involvement on those. Just a hunch. Just a hunch. Let's go over the rest of the month of WWE NXT. Finn Balor, a real length of his new contract, 5-year deal. Again, this recurring theme of re-signing talent for long-term deals and eliminating basically, it's almost subconsciously, any doubt that WWE is not a place to be anymore. And during that end of that, for a long part of the Vince McMahon era, especially near the end, it was just like you see talents are just frustrated and they're done and they need something different. And now people are happy and staying around and everyone's making a ton of money. And just took, a few things to change, especially one guy being out of charge that made a big, huge difference. Joe Tessitore, of course, ESPN broadcaster, joined the WWE commentary team. Tyler Bate underwent surgery for a torn pec. On the NXT side, Cedric Alexander joined the roster. Shantae Adonis appeared on the show. Those two guys would be aligned, of course. The company had said reported they had significant discussions about the Intuit Dome hosting Survivor Series. However, that could happen at some point, but really, as we just talked about, that's going to be the first place where we will see WWE on Netflix for the very first time. Company announced their full schedule for the rest of 2024. SummerSlam for August taking shape. Cody Rhodes defending the title against Solo Sikoa. Liv Morgan accepting Rhea Ripley's World Title Challenge, Logan Paul versus LA Knight for the U.S. title. Naomichi Marufuji was set to guest commentate on the Abima broadcast in Japan. The Miz set to host the show, and then this one I remember stood out, a three-hour pre-show for SummerSlam. You can't get enough action.
Right.
three-hour pre-show. Miko Satomura was advertised for WWE house shows in Japan. She also announced she's going to be retiring this spring coming up, and also took on Bayley for then champion Bayley for the WWE women's title at a Tokyo house show, which Bayley was over the moon about being able to be part of. Company announced details for NXT No Mercy happening in September, Denver, and then Halloween Havoc, which is happening in October. Did happen in October in Hershey, Pennsylvania. A Wyatt Six angle took place on the Pat McAfee show, of all places. Again, just a partnership that really, like, really helped them attract that 18 to 24 audience, young males, and how they incorporated WWE, but not like slamming people over the head with it, literally. Mm-hmm. But just these little things like this, Triple H appearing during Super Bowl weekend, and all, like, there's all these little things just kind of made it seem cool. And like, oh, what's going on? You know, those type of things are, this was part of it. Big E said he felt great. Not in position to be cleared for his WWE return yet. That was a recurring theme throughout the year whenever he was interviewed. CM Punk said Vince McMahon's removal was one of the factors that illuminated his return to the company. I'm sure the paycheck and the fact that AEW thing went so badly, I'm sure that didn't help at all. Janelle Grant filed a petition for medical records related to the lawsuit against WWE and Vince McMahon. And Vince's team filed a motion to lift a court order pause in the Janelle Grant lawsuit. Of course, that was just lifted just a couple days ago. Johnny Gargano's family restaurant was destroyed in a fire. The Wyatt Six, speaking about them, a Pat McAfee appearance, so to speak, was a precursor to their in-ring debut, which was set for an edition of Raw in July. Nick Khan, Triple H, and the mayor of London met about the potential of hosting WrestleMania. And I put a tiny belt here. If you remember, they had this picture, and it was just the tiniest belt. And Tony Khan, when he visited London, when All In had back there, it was a massive belt that he brought over. you know that was a reason for that. Whether they're going to host WrestleMania or not, it's possible. Anything is possible these days. I think probably some of the other PLEs might be more realistic. Bret Hart said that his involvement in the Owen Hart Cup and for AEW might ruffle WWE's feathers. I include this because it is crazy that the guy that left WWE in such a huff and WCW and the whole thing is now afraid of ruffling the company's feathers. It's just full. Right. Anything that happens today, we're like, someone will never go back. It always can come full circle, like 25 years later. You know what I mean? John Cena set to appear in the season premiere of The Simpsons. Jesse Ventura attended an episode of Raw in St. Paul, Minnesota, fitting because he will officially return to the company as part of Saturday night's main event. Again, full circle, decades later, full circle. Yes. Everything is possible. Beth Phoenix, no longer under contract with the company in WWE. I think probably at some point she might appear in AEW. Triple H on a potential Brock Lesnar return, we'd be open to the conversation. And the Motor City Machine Guns, after being rumored to be going to AEW for a long time, were then rumored to be going to WWE. There's a lot there. Thoughts about any of it?
What a busy month July was, looking back on it. Jeez, yes. Louise.
And that's just WWE.
Yeah, and it's funny. Yeah, the ruffling feathers thing from Bret Hart is so funny because not only the history with him, but has Bret Hart ever worried about ruffling feathers in his life? I feel half of what he does is ruffle feathers. A fun stat I saw, by the way, with John Cena as a guest on The Simpsons is he's only the second wrestler ever to be on The Simpsons, which blew my mind as a funny little stat.
Other than Bret, right?
Yeah, just those two. And I thought,
really?
With how popular wrestling has been at different times, they never got any of them to do a quick thing. But
that's interesting, huh?
Just a crazy little stat there. But a lot of good stuff here. Joe Tessitore, by the way, I think sneakily one of the best signings WWE has had in a very long time. I am a huge fan of him on commentary. And they've had so many people who have come in from like ESPN, and it's just failed miserably, I'll be honest. When they signed him, I was like, here we go again. It's not going to work out. But I think he has been incredible since joining the team. I think he has been a great signing for them and really holds it down on Raw. I'm a big fan of Joe. How do you feel about Joe?
I know, no complaints. Yeah, no complaints. I think you're right. I think when there's been this, yeah, this cycle, I think that's right. You've had the oh my God, Jimmy Smith was in there before. You had
Adnan.
Adnan Virk,
Yeah.
of course,
Yeah.
and it's just like, well, why is this going to be any different? And so far it has. Again, we'll kind of see, but again, without Vince there, that certainly is an opportunity that these guys are going to have to not get screamed at in their ear and have a chance to
Right.
kind of grow and all that. But yeah, we'll yeah, I so far so good. I think we'll, yeah, based on the past, well, let's see where we're at in a year, but anything's possible.
I was really bummed out to hear about Satomura at retiring. I was a big NXT UK fan, and she was a part of that brand for a while.
Oh, so
And
you were the one fan. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
I was the guy that everyone watched.
Watching at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on
Yeah,
Thursdays or whatever. Yeah.
I loved it, man. I'll be honest. Well, it's not going to be available anymore. But I was going to say, if people are looking to watch a show, like go back and check out NXT UK. It was really good. Satomura was on there, and she was always a legend. She's been a legend for a long time, but to hear she was retiring also was like, oh man, that's a bummer. I want to go see her last match, and I realize it's probably gonna be like in Japan or something. I'm probably not gonna fly all the way to Japan for a wrestling match, but that was kind of a bummer to hear she was retiring and stepping away. But it's cool that Bayley got to have the match with her as well. So I was happy to see that happening. And even someone who wasn't super tied to WWE historically, it was cool to see WWE doing some stuff with her to sort of honor her career as well. And in general, I think that's one of the reasons that guys like a Finn Balor are okay with signing longer contracts, why more people have been wanting to come back and not ruffle feathers. Because I think now there's just such a respect for wrestlers who have been doing this for a long time, whether you were WWE or not. And people want to be tied to that, especially as they get older. I think someone like a Finn Balor, as he gets older, knows that there will probably be a place for him in WWE, whether it's, once wrestling's done, I don't know if he's going to train or whatever, but maybe even just doing the documentaries, maybe just doing special guest appearances, because they're always taking care of people who have been around for a while and taking care of the history of pro wrestling. I think that's going to pay dividends for WWE when it comes to signing people for a very long time, knowing they're not just going to get tossed out like garbage when they're done.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that, reviewing this list earlier today, and that stood out, that word respect and respect for their legends, and also again people that weren't, yeah, as you said, not created there, right? And I think the fact that they're showing those people respect, that when you're trying to even attract free agents too, I think that's another good thing of like you're gonna get treated with you're gonna treat well here. And you're not going to become treated like a joke. And that was something that AEW had this advantage forever because they, when they first started, and even now, I mean, they still respect, stars in the past, but it was like a revelation for some people. Like, oh, you don't have to treat these people like jokes and embarrass them and things like that just because they're a little bit older, maybe a little bit thicker and a little bit less hair. Think, just that they help build this foundation for what you have now. And I think relations like this, yeah. I mean, if she showed up on WTV, I think a lot of people probably would know who she was. But the fact that they're willing to do this, I would say behind the scenes, but kind of just the way that they're doing it is showing respect to someone that, again, to your point, she was in NXT for a while, and they're doing right. And I think there's been a big change post Vince.
Yeah, and that's one of the most I love that about wrestling, because also WWE's so good at presenting them like a star too. Like you mentioned, Satomura, she came on TV. She had a few TV spots in the States, but a lot of people probably aren't gonna know who she is. But I think that they would do a good job of educating us to know, like, oh, this is a star. They would treat her as a legend, and so the viewers would get it. Oh, this is someone who's important, and that's something that I think it's just great as a fan, because again, as you get older, and this for the young fans who don't know this, eventually you're going to get older, and eventually all your people, eventually all the people you love, your Javon Evans, eventually is going to be an older wrestler, and younger wrestler is going to be running circles around him, and you're going to say, I hope WWE lets my hero look like a star for a little bit longer. And it's something that as you get older, you like to see the fans that you or the wrestlers that you grew up watching do well and go out on a high note instead of looking bad. I will say, though, as you talked about AEW earlier, I do want to shift real quick to that tiny belt. And so I always say there are certain aspects of this, sometimes when companies take shots at each other or do things, I'm like, oh, I don't want to see this. But this is the kind of shot I like, this kind of dirty, this kind of shot where, like, oh, you gave him a tiny belt, we're gonna give him a massive belt.
Exactly.
I don't know what they were thinking when they gave him that tiny belt. How did they not look at that belt and go, oh yeah, we can't do this? Come on,
They might as well not.
guys.
You might as well not give him one. It was so bad. I can't believe it. I can't. This is, I don't like some of the questions that get asked at the post-event press conferences. This is one I wish was asked. Like, can you just take me back? What happened there? What happened? Whose fault was it? Somebody's fault.
I mean, I imagine in their head, I like to think they thought, oh, this is something that will go on his desk or something, a little display, which is fine, but don't take a picture holding it like a title. You know what
The way your
I
hands,
mean?
it was like that small. It was tiny.
Yeah, it was so small. And I think Nick Khan was even holding his wrist, like in the
Oh
picture. Like, it just
my
looked like a
God.
little kid holding a little toy. It was
Yeah, it's good.
so funny. But good on AEW for bringing a big championship and be like, here's a real
Exactly.
championship.
Some weight to it. Some weight to it. All right. Well, speaking of AEW, let's flip to the AEW and ROH side of the fence. And to me, there wasn't really any one thing that stood out, so I kind of separated it out into three sections. We'll go over all these because obviously this was for the drive to All In. Bryan Danielson won the men's Owen Hart tournament and earned a world title shot against Swerve Strickland at All In. We had Mercedes Moné and Britt Baker official for that show. The company announced a fan event going into that. Darby Allin versus Jack Perry for the TNT title was set for the show. Of course, some other things as well. I should have included this in my June recap, so I'm going to include it here just so I have everything. New Japan announced a Forbidden Door-esque Wrestle Dynasty event with AEW, CMLL, and Ring of Honor. Now I'm wondering why I included it in this section versus New Japan, but regardless, I think a lot of people consider this an AEW show, and there was so much talent there. Yeah, that happened, of course. Actually, the reason I included it here, as I'm explaining all my rationale on this podcast, is because this was announced during Forbidden Door in June. That's why I included it in the section. So, yeah, those are my thoughts. Cole Carter, the Ring of Honor roster, underwent surgery for a broken arm. Britt Baker, in a return promo, detailed suffering a mini stroke, which no one really knew about. And of course, she was gone for essentially a year, I believe. And she was just gone, but kind of explained this whole thing. And then her in-ring return was set for Dynamite 250. Donna Dijak said that Tony Khan has been made aware of my interest in AEW. And to this point, as we sit here in December 13th, he has not appeared in AEW. Hangman Page made his return to the company as part of the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. Ethan Page, when asked about AEW, said it was so chaotic and unorganized compared to NXT. Ricochet, the free agent, expected to make his debut soon. Roosh joined the Don Callis family on Rampage, a long association between those crews. If you remember that, Marco Stunt, yes, Marco Stunt made a surprise return in AEW Collision to challenge Jack Perry. And that would be his last match, retiring after that due to medical concerns. Hologram made his debut after a bunch of vignettes and so on and so forth. Notable because this is essentially a Tony Khan IP creation, so a little bit different for him. JD Drake dealing with a torn foot ligament. Rio, big surprise, dealing with an arm injury following a match on Collision. And then, of course, we had MJF's month. He won the International Championship from Will Ospreay at the aforementioned Dynamite 250 in a very long match, just under an hour. I think it was 59 minutes and like 43 seconds or something, really, really close to that 1 hour mark. So he was set to defend the title in CMLL against Templario, set to defend the title, which he renamed the American Championship, if you remember that, against Michael Oku at a RevPro event. And then the rematch for the title was set for All In. Eddie Kingston underwent surgery on his knee, all types of things going on there. And then Samoa Joe, this is one I forgot about, got stretchered out so he could go by Chris Jericho. You remember he was on the forklift and just he got sent through this wall. And he went, second season of Twisted Metal was ready to film. So that was done to write him off. And he should be back at any point now. He's good to go. So, wouldn't be surprised to maybe see him at World's End. And yeah, we'll see what happens there. Thoughts about any of that?
It's funny, Ethan Page talks about the chaotic nature of AEW, and as you're reading through this, it does feel a little chaotic, all this different stuff that's happening and people who are coming and going. Now in pro wrestling, I gotta confess, I love a little chaos in my
Of
pro
course.
wrestling. So I'm here for it. But yeah, it does feel like as I'm reading through, it's like, wow, a lot of stuff went down in July in AEW, even on TV, not just behind the scenes. Something I always wonder, maybe one of the bigger questions here is, Britt Baker, she talks about what she went through with the mini stroke. And I sometimes wonder if AEW, with WWE, when someone's injured, I don't know if it's the publicly traded company aspect of what they do, but most of the time when someone's injured, we as the audience are told pretty clearly this person's hurt on the shelf. We may not know the details of it, but this person's on the shelf. Don't expect them back for so long. I sometimes wonder if AEW should be a little bit more upfront with that. And not, I don't need to know the details of what someone's going through, but I think there are certain people who aren't on TV, and we always say, like, why aren't they on TV? And then we get frustrated that they just disappeared when we find out later, oh, they had a torn ACL or something. That's why they
Right.
weren't on TV. I wonder if some of the pressure that AEW gets, at least online, for people not being on TV would be alleviated a little bit if they just said this person is on the shelf for the next so many months. Because I know, like, Kenny Omega, he's not on TV, but we know he's not healthy. So we're not upset that he's not on TV. You know what
Right.
I mean? And
Yeah.
so I wonder if AEW would maybe they'd help themselves a little bit if they just said this person is not medically cleared.
Yeah, and in June they said I remember I read a thing from Tony Khan. He said he was considering doing an injury TV show,
Yeah.
like some sort of, I assume he meant probably YouTube or something like that, but basically like an injury
Right.
report show or something like that. But yeah, there's, I think when there's so many questions about where someone is, there should be a pretty clear answer. And it's not a, it's funny because I talked about this last episode too. It's not like a HIPAA violation. You're not saying here's their X-rays and here's exactly what
Right.
happened. You can see these things there, like just say they're out with it. Undisclosed injury for X amount of months or undetermined amount of time, and just leave it at that. To your point, yeah, remove the mystery out of it, and so people aren't just kind of like, "Where's this person?" Because again, we're very plugged in, but there are a
Yeah.
lot of people that may not be, and there's like, "Where'd that person go?" Like they get fired, you know what I mean? I just imagine, like, that's probably what happens with some people.
Right. And I think if you know that they're hurt, then you sort of you don't get upset that they're not following through on something. You know,
Right.
if you build up a story and then suddenly the person's gone, but you find out it's because they hurt themselves, you're like, oh, well, I get it. They're not able to compete. And so, yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't need to know the details. That's, I don't need their personal information, but just say, yeah, undisclosed injury. They're off TV for the next foreseeable future or whatever the case may be.
Exactly.
But the I want to talk about MJF and this American Championship because I don't know how
Yes.
you felt about it, but I loved the American Championship idea, and I love the idea of this just sort of brash American going to other places and sort of being the, you know, and as wrestling fans, we're used to the American being the hero and like I'm the all-American good guy, but I guess as a kid watching, like, you know, a Hulk Hogan, for instance, you don't think of that. Like, if you're in another country, you don't like this guy. This guy's a jerk. He's the American. And so I thought that they left a lot of meat on the bone of someone being just a cocky American going to other countries and talking about how their America is the best, you know,
Yeah.
and rubbing that into people's faces. I felt like it played weird on TV because they did a lot of those promos in America, and it's hard to boo the American guy in America talking about America being great to the guy who's not from America. I thought that played weird on TV, but I think there's money there for a traveling champion to go to other countries talking about America being great
Sure. Yeah.
and fight for the American title.
Yeah, I think kind of their idea was, oh, we're going to send him these other countries so he can do that there. But it was a CML show and a Rev Pro show, which I mean they show clips of, I think, but it didn't have the effect of the fans. You kind of really see them getting into it and all that. And I think probably their idea is, well, he's going to be so hated going into All In because it's not in the United States, but the build, to your point, is all in the United States. So it's kind
Yeah.
of hard to get that effect. I thought it was a nice touch. I think it was probably a highlight for him in what I thought was a very uneven year overall, just because he was gone so often. And again, he didn't come back till May. Then he was gone. He's been gone a long stretch for this, for the Happy Gilmore movie. And I don't think this Adam Cole thing is working at all. It is like, it is so wild to see, how the summer of 2023, that thing was as hot as it gets. and just to see where it is now and how people just moved on. Because this is why I keep bringing up the CM Punk thing. Because CM Punk, they kept him on TV and they made it a thing and they made him a character. And granted, there was, early on, he couldn't get too physical, but it was an antagonistic type thing towards Drew. With Adam Cole, he was on. So there was a Devil reveal. Then MJF disappeared for 5 months. MJF boots Adam Cole low. Adam Cole disappears for months. And then they come back and it's just you've missed that whole cycle of just antagonistic back and forth of like build of like we're going to get there, someone screwing over the other one, so on and so forth. You just didn't have that. Where in the Punk side, they figured out a way to make it work with it with the physical capabilities had. It wasn't an every week thing, it was like once every month, give or take, and then it kind of increased. So I just when you kind of look at those two things, and as we go in like World's End, you know, Adam Cole won that match on Wednesday, and there was not that boom of like from the crowd. Not the AJ boom, as I say that, but the but you don't feel that like didn't feel that like elation of the crowd, like finally we're gonna see MJF get his ass kicked. You just didn't feel it. It's kind of just like, okay, can we just like get on? This isn't working. It's so unfortunate, but that's that ankle injury to Adam Cole was devastating in a lot of ways for this whole angle.
And I agree with you, and I don't think you should do this all the time, but I do think in wrestling there are certain times where it's okay to just say, let's just pretend this is done. Let's just not revisit this, you
Sure.
know? And I think they really should have done. I mean, I know there would have been a segment of the fans that would have been like, but don't, like, isn't there an issue with Cole and MJF? But I think most of us, like, when Cole came back, would have been fine if Cole just said, I'm doing something different. MJF is doing something different. We're moving on. Because even when it felt like it was, it did, I don't know, it didn't feel like it was hitting even before Cole disappeared. It felt like something wasn't clicking. And I think I wish they didn't come back to it. Cause yeah, it's so weird too. Cause yeah, you mentioned if you go back a few years, if a few years ago, if I told you're gonna get an Adam Cole versus MJF feud, you'd be like, oh, that's gonna be awesome. That's gonna be incredible. And it's just not working. And I wish they would just abandon it and move on. And I don't know, to your point, if it's the execution. I don't know if it's just because it was start, stop, or now I'm just kind of like, okay, I guess we're doing this.
It's
But yeah, I don't really feel it. I don't I'm just I'm not that into it. You're right. I think that this is probably the highlight for MJF of the year, which is crazy because MJF is incredible. You would think that he'd have a lot of highlights, but yeah, this is probably the best part of the year for him.
Let's go on the second chunk. A lot of stuff here. Darby Allin returned to the company after being cleared from his injuries from what am I thinking of? Double or Nothing, of course. Anarchy in the Arena match and various other matches, you know, getting hit by buses and you know the things that we normally do as we all go out in our day, you know, those type of things. Mariah May won the AEW Women's Owen Hart Foundation tournament and attacked Toni Storm after to continue that angle, which was among the company's strongest, I think, of the year, how they did all that. Say what you want, you know, the Toni Storm thing got a little old at times, but I think overall they landed the plane for that. Tomohiro Ishii set to be with the company for the rest of the summer. It would be a big part of their Arlington, Texas series. Cody Rhodes, when asked, said he would always love AEW, but how his time ended there was terrible. I just hope we get someday get a full dissertation from all sides on everything so we can know everything. I gotta know. I gotta know. CJ Perry, no longer with AEW. Ric Flair, done with the company as well as the energy drink sponsorship. Winds down. We include winds down. I think the company essentially went out of business and they ran out of money to pay. So that was a done deal.
That's a very nice way of phrasing it, I think. Winds down.
Yeah, exactly. The Von Erichs returned to the company during their Arlington, Texas residency, which kicked off in July. Jim Ross underwent wrist surgery, part of his every single month. Something's going on with him. Trent Beretta out of action with injuries. Will Ospreay talking about documentaries earlier. Closing My Chapter was released. I don't think that was an AEW production, but part of his you know end of New Japan. FTR set to make their return on Collision for the first time since April. Dax Harwood suffering a hematoma in the Dynasty ladder match. So they were finally back in action a couple months later. ROH Death Before Dishonor, Mark Briscoe defending the Ring of Honor world title against Roderick Strong. There was a Women's Texas Death Match. And, you know, again, it was just a quarterly special, not a lot of big headlines or anything coming out of that. The company announced that their Battle of the Belts 11, RIP, their date and location reveal is going to be, again, the Esports Arena in Arlington. Kerry Silken said that Tony Khan is not treating Ring of Honor very well. Of course, Kerry Silken, former head of that. Dustin Rhodes said his contract was expiring in September. He hoped that negotiations went well. At this point, we have not heard if he's re-signed yet or not. Assuming he is, because he's competing at Final Battle. He's still double champion. So I guess they're going well enough where he's sticking around. So, or they just haven't announced it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Tony Khan said AEW is not planning a U.S. stadium show anytime in the immediate future. Keep that in mind. Collision will not air. Set not to air head-to-head against SummerSlam. That, again, continuing thing of them doing earlier start times, which I just think is smart for them. Why go head-to-head with the biggest thing in wrestling that night? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Dalton Castle set to miss the remainder of the year following a AEW collision injury. He suffered torn biceps. I think he might have clearly almost got concussed or there was some sort of problem there. He got his bell rung by Roderick Strong, knee lift, and he just got all beat to hell and set to be done the rest of the year. Sky Blue broke her ankle in an episode of Collision. The Patriarchy won the vacant AEW Trios titles on Collision. Of course, the Bang Bang Gang having to relinquish those after Jay White's foot got hurt, which was never officially announced, just an injury, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Again, like, what happened? We have no idea. But it was a foot injury, and it would keep him out for a few months. Kill Switch got hurt as well. Suffering some ailments and things like that, and still not back to it. Even an update was as of yesterday. And the company set to pronounce custom title belts to something called the Southland Conference Championship, which I follow football. I have no idea what that is. Thoughts about any of that?
I don't know what the Southland Conference Championship is either, but good for them for getting some championships. Was I the only one when Darby Allin said he got hit by a bus? I thought, of course, Darby Allin got hit by a bus. Like, that's just what, Darby Allin does when he's out and about. I just assume that he does stuff where he gets hit by buses all the time. Cody Rhodes, I'm with you on this, talking about how his time ending in AEW is terrible. Again, I always try to be sensitive because these are real people and they have personal issues that they don't want to air and whatnot. So I always try to tread lightly with this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it does feel like this is going to be one of those albatrosses that just hangs over everybody until we know what happened. And I almost wondered if it's better, just rip off the Band-Aid, let us know what happened, and then we can always move on with our lives. You know, I look back to like the Montreal Screwjob. You know, if everyone just said, this is what happened, let's move on with our lives, probably wouldn't be something we talk about all the time for the rest of time, you know? But as long as there's this like weird mystery of like, it was bad, but I'm not telling you. I feel like it's just going to follow him forever. Just Cody Rhodes, write the book. We know you're going to write a book. Just write the book. Tell us what it is. We'll buy the book. We'll buy the second one when it comes out. Come on. Tell us what happened.
It'll pay for any NDA lawsuit or anything like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're all going to buy it. Just write the book. Let us know what happened. And we'll go, oh, okay. I have a feeling it's not that interesting is the truth of it. But, as long as this is out there, I agree with you. I'm always going to want to know. And anytime he's talking to someone, there's a part of me in the back of my head that says, ask him why he left AEW. Ask him what happened. What was the terrible thing? I want to know. And it'll just always be there. So just rip the Band-Aid off, Cody. Tell us what happened.
I agree. Was there anything else there, Stella, or you want me to go to the last section?
I think we could go to the last section here. Yeah.
All right, let's hit it. Melissa Santos, the wife of Brian Cage, joined the company as a new broadcast team member. I believe on the Spanish language side, if I remember right. Sammy Guevara returned on Ring of Honor. His wife still has not returned yet, even after earlier in the year saying she was training for return. So we have no idea when Ty Mello is going to make her return. Camille made a surprise appearance on Dynamite, aligned with Mercedes Moné. It was official that she had signed with the company. Team AEW won the Blood and Guts match on Dynamite. Chair shots of the head was a big conversation after Jack Perry took some shots. And Tony Khan was asked about it in a media call the next week or so. And there was talk, again, he tried to kind of dance around the fact that the chair was shaved down. Or, you know, he said there are ways that we go about it and without revealing all the magic, so to speak. But, you know, there's a conversation to be had. But then the usual grifters got involved and they're just like, oh, I can't, especially like people from the old like ECW days, and they're like, I can't believe they're doing this. And it's like, really? Really? Like, there's safety, and then there's just like, oh, come on. This also ended the kind of ended this very lackluster elite, the anti-Tony Khan group, the Young Bucks, EVPs, and all this stuff that were going to kind of take over. A thing that just, a storyline just fizzled out. You remember Tony Khan got the Spike Piledriver on an episode of Dynamite, had the brace at the NFL draft, thought this was going to lead this whole big thing, and it just died on the vine, and it just still went kind of like, huh. There was a lot of talk about Daniel Garcia's contract status with the company. This started to begin in July and would continue through the fall. Shane McMahon met with Tony Khan to discuss possibilities moving forward. This was after in June. He had said he had not met him. There's all these stories coming out about something involved with Shane McMahon and AEW, Tony Khan, and Tony Khan saying he had never met him before. And they actually met by chance at an airport. How about that? Bryan Danielson's wrestling contract was set to expire on August 1st, and Tony Khan said he wanted to make it a priority to re-sign Danielson. I don't know if he did. I don't know what their arrangement is, but Danielson was a man of his word and kept going and kept going. And I'm sure something was figured out, maybe just kept on the down low. Tony Khan said the company is in very deep, exciting conversations with WBD about a new TV contract. Buddy Matthews was learned he signed a lucrative AEW deal months prior. Jon Moxley given time off from the company. Darby Allin won the Royal Rampage match and was set to challenge for the AEW World Title at Grand Slam in September. Bryan Danielson attempted to file for the Yes Chant trademark. I believe that was blocked by WB. I don't know if we've heard the end of that yet. Tony Khan says the ROH brand could grow if it were called AEW Ring of Honor. That's something to keep in mind. If this TV deal happens for Ring of Honor, I expect that to probably happen as well. Dustin Rhodes, speaking of him and the Von Erichs, won the Ring of Honor six-man titles at the aforementioned Battle of the Belts 11. And Maria Kanellis Bennett underwent surgery for, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this, a massive founder adrenal gland, a adrenalectomy, and there's a very long word before that I cannot try to pronounce, but she seems to be doing a little bit better, but obviously a pretty scary situation there. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, another mouthful of stuff happening there. Yeah, I look at the Elite and the thing that they did with Tony Khan, and one of the things that I always I'm bummed out about is I get what they were trying to do there, but I always felt like it was the wrong group to do what they did. And I look back now, and obviously timing wise it wouldn't have worked out, but if the Death Riders were around and they were the ones that attacked Tony Khan, I think the vibe of that whole thing would have been very different, and it would have been a much bigger deal. Just because I feel like that was such a serious thing, and you need a very serious group to do something like that. Where the Elite, I'm a big fan of all the guys in the Elite. I love their matches and stuff, but they're a little silly. They're fun. They're tongue in cheek, and so it's hard to feel like it was as serious when you've got guys doing jokes and stuff about it. And I think it was just the wrong group. But if Jon Moxley were to go out and hit a Death Rider on Tony Khan, I think we would have gone, oh, this is crazy. This what's next, you know? And of course that led right into the Shane McMahon thing, which was really the biggest news at the time. It felt like that was huge news. And I think a lot of people assumed it was only a matter of time before Shane McMahon found himself on AEW TV. That also going with I can't remember when the Vince McMahon doc came out, but it felt like that added to it when you saw just how important it was for Shane McMahon to prove himself, you know? And so it was such a big story there. That's another thing. I wish I knew more details about what was supposed to happen there, what was going on there, what may happen there. I feel like maybe we're not done with that story, but that was definitely one of the biggest pieces of news for AEW, at least in my books, was Shane McMahon.
Exactly. And who knows? I mean, I Brant Thurston brought up to me, it was on the show. He had said there was a he wonders if there's concern that if he brought Shane McMahon in, even as a performer role, that there might be some perception from the outside by people not really kind of familiar with the company that he was involved in leadership somehow. And Tony Khan is very, I don't know if you know, it's very focused on him being the only one, right? And if there some people make, oh, he had to bring in a McMahon to try to turn things around or something like that. So I wonder, I hadn't thought of that. And I'm like, that might make sense. But I don't know. But of course, it would be you talk about chaos and really kind of like weird shit. That would
Yeah.
be Shane McMahon walking out an AEW show, say at World's End, at the end. That would be one of those like, where were you type moments. That would be just so surreal. It'd just be, yeah, surreal is probably the best way to best phrase to put it.
Yeah, and this is why I should never run a wrestling company because I love that kind of stuff. Maybe long, I don't know long term what the right thing is, but like if I was the one making the decision, I'd be like, oh yeah, we need to walk Shane McMahon out here right now. We need to do something surreal and crazy and chaotic. Let's go. So I kind of hope he does. Again, I shouldn't run a wrestling company because maybe I make bad decisions for that reason. But man, I would just love to see it just for the, to your point, you have to be there to see this. I can't believe Shane McMahon is on a show. Last time Shane McMahon was on a non-WWE show, it was when WWE was buying WCW. So it's just, it would be crazy to see. And I would love to see it. And I mean, I don't know, again, I don't know how good he would be backstage because I don't know Shane McMahon personally, but man, I just think as a TV viewing audience, that moment would definitely sit in my head for a long time.
Course, that'd be huge. McMahon on a different pro, that'd be insane. Absolutely insane. Let's go through the month of TNA real quick. Gia Miller signed a new 3-year contract. Jordynne Grace said her contract expires early next year. I think myself and so many people expect it's a fait accompli. She ends up in WWE and is probably a big part of NXT to start with for quite some time. Izzy Dame from NXT answered Jordynne Grace's TNA Impact Open Challenge. Again, the crossover between those two groups. Jonathan Gresham had to pull from Slammiversary due to being deemed unable to compete. I don't know if that meant COVID or something like that, but he was unable to wrestle on that show. The company held Slammiversary, their annual biggest show of the year. Nick Nemeth won the TNA World Title. Speedball Mike Bailey won the X Division title. Earl Hebner made a cameo. The reason this was in Montreal, if you remember, of course, this whole Montreal screw job. I don't know if you've heard of that before. Alexander Hammerstone made his return to the company during this time. There's some title changes. PCO proposed to Stephanie DeLander as part of this whole thing. So, usual kind of wackiness in for TNA. Coming out some changes to their live event schedule for the duration of the year. And then Joe Hendry. Was still a while left of his TNA contract. However, as part of this whole thing, training at the WWE Performance Center full time, which I don't think I'd ever heard of before. Before this happened, where he had a talent contract for another company, working at the PC. So very interesting stuff there. And who knows? Who knows what happened with Joe Trent Hendry? Obviously, NXT liked him quite a bit. TNA didn't really, I think, strike when the iron was hot and giving him the world title when they should have, but and they still haven't. I think that time has probably passed, but very interesting year for Joe Hendry. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, for Joe Hendry and not winning the title, I think sometimes it's easy to say, oh, the chase is where the money is. So let's have him keep chasing. But sometimes eventually we do just check out and we're like, okay, well, I'm not interested anymore. And striking while the iron's hot and finding that right moment is a lot tougher than it sounds. Easy for me to say in hindsight, you know, oh yeah, he should have won the title, but in the moment, yeah, I think they should have pulled the trigger on Joe Hendry. But I look at this connection with NXT and TNA, and I know at least I saw a lot of talk about people saying, oh, this is WWE's way of sort of stealing talent or getting talent from TNA. And I think to myself, when contracts are up, WWE could probably have whoever they want. I don't think they need to steal anybody. You know, when Jordynne Grace's contract is up, regardless of this relationship, Jordynne Grace, if WWE wants her, WWE is going to get her. And I think we saw that with Stephanie Vacker earlier. If they want someone, they're getting them. So I don't think the idea of stealing someone is even a reality in that way. And I think, if anything, again, as a wrestler, if my goal is to main event WrestleMania someday and TNA offers me a contract, I think to myself, that's a backdoor into WWE. I think that helps TNA in so many ways to know that, oh yeah, one of their guys gets to train at the Performance Center full time. You know, I think this is a great thing for TNA. And there's so many good wrestlers there that I hope get the opportunity to get on a bigger stage, whether it be because TNA continues to grow or because they get to go to NXT, WWE. And so I think obviously with TNA, the biggest thing is this year, and obviously this month is the partnership, but July, I think, really highlighted a lot of that for them.
Let's go through Japan. New Japan Stardom revealed their Wrestle Kingdom Week schedule for January. New Japan's Tamashii announced the Oceania Cup tournament for Australia happening in August. Minoru Suzuki was diagnosed with a concussion after a match was stopped due to an in-ring accident. Josh Briggs, talking about, again, the globalization, so to speak, of WWE. These other groups, Josh Briggs and Tavion Heights, were announced to be competing in the NOAH N1 Victory Tournament. Shota Umino confirmed his New Japan G1 Climax return for the 34th edition of the tournament, which kicked off the same month as well. Kota Ibushi returned to DDT Pro Wrestling at their Peter Pan 2024 event. The New Japan revealed their IWGP committee members. El Desperado took a leave of absence from New Japan to undergo meniscus surgery. Anna Jay from AEW was announced for the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix. And I thought, and I think everyone thinks that was a huge, huge win for her. And she seems to be so improved, confident going back. I think it is that was long overdue to get her out there. And I think for other young talents that they think we got something here, but we need kind of a finishing school. Just do that. That's who you should use the partners for. Mm-hmm. Send them off for 2 months. Go do your thing and come back so much better. I think it's been, I think fans have noticed. I think we've noticed it as fans as well. The first matches were announced for New Japan's Capital Collision Show. And again, WWE, AJ Styles squaring off against Naimichi Marufuji at NOAH's Destination 2024. And then Io Sky wrestled Utami Hayashishita at Marigold's Summer Destiny event. And then Julia revealed today her final match in Japan for Marigold before her arrival in WWE. So a lot of WWE in there, but thoughts about any of that?
I like that you talked about the finishing school aspect, because I was looking at Tavion Heights, and I think he's one of the most improved wrestlers of the year. When you look at before his time going to NOAH and after his time, it has been such an improvement for him. And he went so quickly from being somebody like, oh, he's just one of the new guys on NXT, to being like, oh, this guy can go. This guy's got a future. So to your point, I think this is such a good idea. I also think, especially for the NXT wrestlers, and especially for the people who are wrestlers who are brought in that don't have like an indie wrestling background, to get out of WWE for a little bit and see what other companies are like. And I think that's going to be helpful to them, and see how people outside of that training center put together matches, or how the locker rooms look, is going to be very helpful to them as well. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing from all this, was seeing how certain people were able to grow so much. But also, you talk about AJ Styles wrestling outside of WWE again. How cool was that? Just this year in general, not just July, but not to spread over the whole year, but
yeah.
I mean, the ability of wrestlers who are in these big companies who used to be so locked down, being able to wrestle in so many places as a wrestling fan is so cool to see. This is like, people forget, AJ Styles today wrestling in NOAH would have been like a dream match scenario a few years ago. It would have been insane. And now we have multiple examples of that in 1 month. It's so cool to see.
Yep. Yeah, and I expect more of that in the year ahead too, and we'll see. Mm-hmm. They talked about Mexico and Puerto Rico. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting year for them, and see who else they're like. Look, this paid off benefits. You mentioned with Tavion Heights, mm-hmm. they have a lot of behind Josh Briggs in that same respect. It's like, what else can we do more so with TNA? Like, I think it's going to be a very interesting year ahead. For that, and we'll see, you know, perhaps they get more into bed with AAA and expand more in Mexico that way. CMLL is obviously locked down, but yeah, very interesting stuff ahead for WWE, of course. So let's go to the junk drawer. This is basically everything that didn't fit in all the, you know, categories above, if you can believe it. Dijak was set for his post-indie match after his contract ended in June. Paul Walter Hauser issued a MMA cage match challenge to our very own Tom Lawler. Mm-hmm. At MLW Blood and Thunder. Some CMLL news. They revealed the date for Chris Jericho versus Mystico. Willow Nightingale won the vacant CMLL women's title at Fantastic Mania. I believe that was a three-way or four-way. I can't remember. But, of course, Stephanie Vaquer relinquishing that title. Kyle Fletcher set to compete for Team World in the CMLL Grand Prix. Death Triangle was booked for a CMLL event. Ray Phoenix, very in the news this week. I include this also mm-hmm. in here because Pac loves going to Mexico, because he's there, seemed there all the time. He then tagged up with Rocky Romero, was set to of a Arena Mexico event. Claudio Castagnoli also part of the Grand Prix as well. The full teams were revealed. Matt Hardy making his GCW debut, announced to be making that debut at Now and Forever against Nick Gage. How about a match I didn't think would happen at the beginning of the year? And he announced he would be set to be working a multi-show deal. The Dump Matsumoto-focused Queen of Villains release date was announced by Netflix. Of course, that would be coming right on the same time the Mr. McMahon documentary series on Netflix dropped. Jinder Mahal said he wishes he could take back his racial, quote-unquote, WWE promo from 2017. And he also made a surprise GCW debut as well. Good for him. Max Caster was set to miss an indie event following this. I forgot about this global IT outage. Like all these Microsoft. Oh, yeah. I remember that was a weird day at work, like not being able to do. I work for a tech company. There's some things we weren't able to do, and it was very strange. And then Ronda Rousey, of course, a former WWE and UFC star, expecting her second child. Thoughts about any of that?
You know, one of the through lines of this conversation has been the strength of the wrestling indie scene. And I look at people like Jinder Mahal and Dijak being available on the indie scene is just incredible, that you have guys that big, that seasoned, that talented, that are just available for these shows. And GCW easily has taken advantage of it better than just about any other company on the indie level that I can think of. And getting these wrestlers who have been discarded and making them so cool again to see, and seeing someone like a Jinder Mahal, who a lot of people have given a hard time to over the years, we'll put it that way. But suddenly he's in GCW doing this. It's like, oh, that's so cool. He's in GCW now. Dijak as well looks awesome when he does these indie shows. But a little advice for Paul Walter Hauser. Never pick a fight with a guy with cauliflower ears, buddy. That's just a bad idea, no matter what happens. Look, they could disrespect you as much as they want. They got cauliflower ears. You throw your hands up and go, I'm not getting involved. That's exactly what you do, Paul.
Exactly. Yeah. So you mentioned Jinder. One final point on him. So it illustrates how much when people get released, it's a question of how bad do they want it? And, you know, someone like Jinder has been doing this a long time, in and out WWE a couple times. How bad does he want to keep doing this? Does he want to have to start booking his own stuff and doing the travel to high school gyms and like small venues? And like, is he willing to get back in the minors, so to speak? And I say minors, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but you know, it's away from the super bright lights and the big arenas to smaller venues. And are you willing to do that grind again? And some people are, we see it. If you look in the past, I've done this series for a couple of years. You look back and you see all these people get released, like, what happened to this person? What happened to this person? What happened to this person? And they're like, it's just not for me. And then other ones are like, they get back out there and do it. Sydney Akeem, the former Scripps in WWE and NXT, has now more buzz on him than nearly anyway. I think it's been released in like a year or so. It just, he reinvented himself and now sees clips on social media all the time. And now it's just like, who is this guy? When before it was like, as Reggie and Scripps is kind of like treated as a joke, there's a whole big difference. And so you can get back out there if you're willing to be like, you can tell the people like, I want to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to grind and I'm going to figure it out. So Jinder Mahal getting uncomfortable, going to a place like GCW, which most people wouldn't expect him. Good on him. I'm glad those guys do that.
I'm glad you said that, because yeah, there's so many that you see it. You wonder what happened to them, and then you Google them, and you're like, oh, they just got out of the wrestling business once they got released. And you know, I don't frown on anyone doing whatever it takes to, you know, get by. And sometimes you just have to make those decisions for your life. But there is, someone like Jinder Mahal. I don't know his personal financial situation, but I'm sure he could have probably bided his time a little bit or done something differently. But to say, no, I'm going to go to GCW and do some shows. And he's done some other shows beyond GCW, I believe, since then as well. And Dijak as well. And you see that these guys want it and they want to win. And that makes you want to cheer for them. Like, I was a fan of Dijak in NXT before. I'm a fan of Dijak now even more. And if he gets signed again, I'm like, this dude really wants it. I'm excited for him. But yeah, when you see someone who maybe goes into NXT, they're one of the college athletes that get signed.
Yep.
Then they get cut and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I'm done with wrestling. It's like, oh, okay, you didn't really want to do this anyways.
Yep, you can tell. You can tell.
Yeah.
But one thing I can definitely tell, your passion for this business and you know your shit. And
Oh, thank you.
this is a great talk. We're already at the end. And before I let you go, let's give a chance to plug where people can reach you. I know you kind of take a little bit of break now that Wrestling Inc., the podcast and the video interviews and stuff have kind of changed and gone away, but kind of where can people follow you and keep track of you?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. As mentioned, I was with Wrestling Inc., but those shows have been stopped. So now I am looking forward to my next adventure in 2025. May end up on another platform, may start my own. We'll have to see. But for now, follow me at Real Jack Farmer, like I said, across all social media, and I will keep everyone updated there.
Sounds great. All right, Jack, this has been great. It's been great to get to know you and spend an hour and a half with you and all this stuff. And I think people enjoy this a lot. Jack, thanks so much for stopping by.
Yeah, man, Josh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.